You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade, New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Now more than ever, are we put in a place where we need to stand up for what we believe in. We have these powerful, engaging tools to influence others. But I mean, keep the balance. You believe something, share it. What's cool about the hacker culture is information should be free. So then everybody's sharing this stuff. Before, to go up against an institution, I'd have to almost be an institution. Now I could go viral.
It reminds me, though, of this trend from humans to data.
You got to be smart with your own data. Because look at the history. Look at the pattern of history. It's either you trust the government or you need to be the person policing that.
Yeah, I sort of think data is the government.
Right.
You may, actually you probably, have heard of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum. I call them choose-yourself currencies because they don't depend on any institutions to function, and they're simply exploding in price right now. Some have jumped as high as 3,000%, 21,000%, and even a rare 81,000%. If you're missing out on this boom, don't worry, you're not alone. Most people are not investing in crypto simply because they don't even know how to get started. So I decided to do something about that. I want to help listeners like you get started in this booming market. So I'm offering a free 6-video series masterclass on cryptocurrencies, all for free. I'll walk you step by step through the entire process. If you're interested in claiming this free masterclass, please go to altucher.io. That's altucher.io/masterclass, where you'll find all of the details. So this is an odd podcast for me, and I'll explain why. Normally, at this point, I will introduce my guest. We'll have some nice chatter. I'll kind of explain his background a little bit more. I do have a guest right in front of me. I'm going to be calling him Mr. X. Or if that sounds kind of funny, maybe I'll just start calling him X or something like that. And his voice is going to be slightly distorted for reasons that will become clear as you listen to this podcast. So do you prefer Mr. X or Master X?
I prefer Mr. X would be fine, right? As long as you don't call me DMX, I'm okay.
Well, DMX, if you were DMX, it might be okay.
That's true.
So when we met, the first story I heard was, of course, this really fascinating story about this kid in a military academy where something happens. I want to start off with that story just to kind of set the setting of where we're going with this. But why don't you start off with that story and I'll ask questions along the way.
Yes.
You're at a military academy and I'm not even going to let you talk and ask some questions. Were you like the geekiest guy at the military academy?
No, I wasn't. I actually wasn't the geekiest guy. I mean, I guess it depends who you ask, right? I thought I was the man back then, right? But I wasn't the geekiest guy. It was an interesting collective of kids who went there, right? And, you know, you had like... So there's a lot of big donors, right? A lot of like big names, current president, all that went to that school, right? So then they had a good endowment. So they had high speed internet, right? So everybody was kind of geeky because that's what you did on your free time, right?
So you had access to all this computer. We had previously been interested in computers, or now you suddenly had access to all this computing equipment and Wi-Fi. And this is in the 90s. So It was when the internet was like booming. So things were happening. Did that kind of like draw you into the computer room instead of the athletic field?
I mean, well, look at it this way, right? I mean, like to communicate to the outside world, right? The only medium we had at that point was the internet, right? And then so like if I wanted to talk to people at home, right? If I wanted to talk to what I can, like girls, you know what I mean? Like I had to like find them up and like find them online. And like, so that was like how we like we were so secluded. I mean, not jail, but we were heavily, I don't know, confined in a space. So that's how we got out.
I mean, I know the school, you were far away from every place.
Right.
So
we didn't go off campus.
Oh, you weren't allowed?
No, I mean, during the week, you weren't. It's not like you go in and go out, man. Everything was regimented, and it was great. I loved it, but everything's regimented from, like, you wake up, first mess, salute the flag, go to class, second mess, right, back to class, then change 15 minutes, go to sports, right? After sports, third mess. After third mess, you have 2 hours of study hall, 1 hour free time, go to sleep, do it all over again.
And so you have some free time, though, which you used in a very interesting way that I can relate to. I kind of, we have, I think, at least back then, we had a similar knowledge base. You went in a specific direction with yours that almost got you into major trouble, but ended up changing the course of your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so describe the actual event, that took place, Mr. X. So how old were you at this point?
About 13 years old, right? 13, 14 years old, right? So, I mean, what do we have to do, right? So we're just tinkering around. And what I was interested in, it's like there are websites that they didn't let us go to. Like even MTV.com was censored. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that they had censored. So like the first thing we wanted to do is like, man, how do I see that, right? So then, I mean, I was pretty good in school, right? So I didn't like the 2 hours of study hall, right? I just spent like trying to figure out like, oh, hey, man, how do we do this, right? So, like, I mean, and there were sites back then that you were allowed to go to, right? Like, I remember there's a few. There's Soldier X, right? There's Port Wolf. There's a few where you could learn on, like, hey, man, how do you crack, you know, these firewalls? How do you do this? How do you do that, right? So then I gained a big interest in that, right?
And back then, by the way, you mentioned MTV.com. And I apologize if I interrupt too much. I'm a serial interrupter.
Cool.
But, like, MTV.com, you mentioned specifically, it reminds me that back, and you also mentioned firewalls, it reminds me that all of these companies and sites, particularly in the late 90s, they had no clue what security or firewalls were. Most companies were kind of disconnected in a weird way from the business of the internet.
Absolutely.
So MTV.com, they didn't realize, and I know this from my own personal experience, they didn't realize that their email was completely open to outside invaders. So just as a joke, right. I would email, like at the time I was working at HBO, I would get into the MTV email using ways which you'll describe in a second. And I would email my boss like job offers from MTV and, you know, wait a day or two before I told him.
I was
just making a joke. But all these things were I don't want to say they were easily hackable. You still had to know the language to speak. Like what people don't understand is that every service you use on the internet, like email, web, you know, mobile type services, they all speak their own specific language to each other across the network. That's different than English and it's different than a programming language, but that's how they communicate. Hey, are you okay? I'm okay. Let's start exchanging messages. And so MTV just, if all you had to do was know how to speak that email language, the SMTP protocol, and you were in.
Yeah, you could be the CEO of Coca-Cola.
Right. Well, I would do that.
Right. Yeah. No. I know.
CEO of MTV.
Yep. Yep.
So. Okay. So tell us what you did and roughly with who.
All right. So check this out. So then, like one of the things, like I mean, there was an ISP that a lot of people used back then, right? And had a great jingle. And then, so I was just like hacking
around. And an ISP is like an internet service provider. So millions of people were signed up to the internet probably for the first time ever.
Correct.
Through this company.
Absolutely. They were. They had commercials and everything were large. And then so like, I'm like, okay, cool. How does this work? How's this going on? Maybe there's a way I can get to MTV.com if I like can manipulate who I am, right? Which at that point, like, wasn't the case, right? The firewall's basically like, you know, RIP and whatnot, right? But I'm messing around trying to think, oh, cool, maybe if I'm someone else, I can go see it, right? So go ahead. And then, like, they had these files back then, like, they stored there, like, think of it this way. There's a piece, like you said, in that transfer protocol, right, that says who I am, right? There's a hashed out password, right? And then to go to the ISP, and I get a response, right? So then my response was like, you know, like my handle, my email address back then, and then, you know, a hash. So I'm like, all right, cool. I mean, what happens if we change a string around, right? So what I was able to do, right, there's a certain method in which you could ping a response and get a lot of responses, right? So then...
What do you mean? So you would...
Think of it is like if for all database geeks out there, right, and they'll kind of know it's like a hash string where, like, if you think select star, right, it was something to that accord, right, where like, where I
generate. I see. So let me try to explain because I think I understand now what you're saying.
Okay.
So you basically, instead of giving a specific name or requesting, right, instead of requesting, does a certain name exist that I could start communicating with, you requested everybody's name.
Right. I went ahead and took the full response, right?
Not knowingly,
right? Mm-hmm. I was just like messing around with stuff I was learning, right?
And you did that because you wanted to get some accessible names that you could use? Like, was that the...
No, I wanted to get in CMTV.com. So I thought if I went in as someone else, maybe I could see it, right? Elementary, the dumbest thing, right? And then, so then I went ahead and did that, right? And I started looking at, so like the first thing that you would see, like for just you, you would see your basic information because they disclose some of that, right? So let's say, they'd say Mr. X, right? And then here's some personal information. And then there's
like
some
my
of
address.
The hash string. Yeah, and some of the hash string, right? So then I did that. And then I started seeing like that text file, like that black terminal, right? Grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And I'm starting to get a lot of people's names, right? They're not mine. I don't know these people, and a lot of information, right? So then I'm like, at first, like, you're like, whoa, this is kind of cool, right? Whoa, what is this, right? And then you're kind of like, and the file still keeps growing and populating. A few minutes later, you're like, whoa, I'm going to get in some serious trouble, man.
So what other information other than names and addresses was it giving?
I can't really disclose that, right? And I'll tell you why in a second, but it gave personal information. Right, that wasn't normally, that shouldn't have been or wasn't supposed to be, or they didn't intend it to be disclosed.
So I'm not going to ask you to confirm it. The only thing I could possibly guess is financial related information, but don't say anything. You're getting all this information on a screen.
That I could have done a lot with, but then, like I said, my intent purpose, right, was to look at stuff that I was censored. So like censorship drove me to this pretty much, right? So then I emailed it to him. I emailed the ISP, right? I found like support, you know what I mean, help here.
So you're 14 years old and you just simply email customer service the file essentially of their customers.
This is what I found.
And this quote unquote information you have on them.
This is how I did it, right? And then part of it is I had to hack a file that was local, right? On my machine, right? I sent that thing and I gave a brief description of how I did it and whatnot.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You had to hack a local thing because...
That's
had,
what talked and generated.
You had to
response.
Change the right. So you had to change the way you were querying their communicating with their
correct
answerer.
Correct.
If that's the way to describe it. And the idea is if you were to do that, they can say, oh, it's very simple. If we see this kind of query, we'll change the way we respond to it. It would be a very simple fix on their part.
Yeah, super simple, right? And it was probably an oversight, just bug. Right. I mean,
I don't believe it. This is also one of the biggest companies in the world at the time.
Right.
And I think just people just didn't think about these things.
Probably. You know what I mean?
And
I
there's
mean,
still it, lots it, of things people don't think about. All they think about that
crazy.
One.
Crazy. But it's crazy what people don't think about. But yeah, they didn't think about it. But you know how much
don't
software.
Don't think I'm not going to get back to what you just said.
do you know how much software goes out that's bugs? Right. You know what I mean? Like I almost look at some of the software companies that are out there, all great, all innovative, right? But like think of like if they were the ones in charge of the elevators. Right? How often, when's the last time you went on your computer, right? And it's like, oh man, this thing doesn't work, right? Like, Matt, what was that the elevator, dude? You know what I mean? So like
and all the elevators, I forget if you were telling me this or someone else, all the elevators are like networked together right now. Like all the Otis elevators.
That wasn't me, but I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure someone was telling me that they're all kind of centralized networked together. So wow. One person can monitor how they're all doing.
Yeah, probably certain aspects. I would hope it wouldn't be all aspects, but probably certain aspects of like, because then they get safety information. That's how they find things like these loopholes now.
Right.
You know what I mean? So back to that, right? So then sent that out. I'm like, all right, cool. Nothing happened. Like a week or two passed. All right.
So you send a message to them of this critical breach in their entire company. In fact, it was such a critical breach that now if a company had a breach like that, they're required by law to instantly disclose
it. Absolutely, yep.
But the SEC wasn't sort of aware of these breaches back then, so they weren't required.
Correct. So then I'm like, all right, cool, I'm chilling. Dude, like I said, I'm a kid, right? What am I worried about, right? I'm worried about like hanging out, getting girls, all that type of stuff, right? So then did that. And then one day, right, I we had a chain of command. Kids ran kids at that school, right? It's a great institution. And I think it's one of the best schools you could ever send your kid to. I get called to the general's office. Now, let me tell you, right? So we had a corps of cadets of like 600 kids. When this guy would walk into the mess hall, everybody's loud. Everybody's going, you know, kids are from city. We're kids, like young kids, like, yeah, eating, right? Think of like a lunchroom, right? When this guy would walk in, it would get quiet. Silence, pure silence. So this guy, old army, like two-star general, right? And I keep trying to say, I immediately want to say his name, right? But great guy. But he had like a boot that he jumped off helicopters with the Vietnam mud still on it on his desk. This type of guy he was, right? So then I get called to his office. Like no one gets called to the superintendent's office.
So were you in a classroom and like suddenly?
No, I was right outside. I was outside right before second mess. So what happened was everybody's marching into the mess hall and then I get called out. You know what I mean? Mr. X, the general wants to see you. I'm like, what is going on? So then I'm thinking like, what happened? I'm like, all right, dude, I made out with that girl last week behind the mess hall. Maybe that's it. I don't know, what's going on? I'm like, you never got called, right? So then I'm standing out there and there's this position called parade rest where you put your hands, interlock your thumbs, right? And you're standing out there. So I'm standing there, wait there for like 15, 20 minutes, right? And I'm just sweating bullets, like what I do, what's going on, man? Am I getting, I don't know what I did. Cause you know, fear is really from the unknown. And I really didn't know what I did wrong, right? So I'm just like, oh. So then I get in, right? There's a police.
Is this a good, like making you wait for 15 minutes, does that increase the fear? Is this like almost like an interrogation tactic?
I don't think it was an interrogation tactic, but man, did it feel like one. Like I was sweating bullets. Like the first, like, all right, cool. 15 minutes later, man, I'm ready to cut a deal. You know, like, whatever it is. Yeah, I did it. Just get me out of here. You know what I mean? So then I walk in the general's office, right? And then I see to my right a police officer. I'm like, whoa. That's the first thing I saw. Like, cause, I mean, like, so like before I went to military school, I grew up in a city, right? And, you know, like cops, like, I don't know. We just kind of, I was scared of them, right? So then, I look, I'm like, oh man, even though there's nothing to be scared of cops now, right? But I'm like, whoa, what is going on? There's a cop. And I see two suits on my left, right? And the general sitting at his desk. And then like, dude, I'm still feeling the heart pump now, right? I'm like, oh man, what's going on?
Is the general looking angry at you?
Dude, the guy always looked angry. He looked angry probably at his wife. You know what I mean? No knock to her. The guy, I mean, like he saw real stuff, right? So then, he's looking concerned, right? And he had these like window glasses, like these, you remember those huge glasses with the two frames that connected both lenses? Uh-huh. Like he's sitting there wearing them. And then he puts his hand up, right, on his desk and he looks over to me, right? And he goes, that's him. And then one of the suits was like, I remember, if I say the handle, it's a lot funnier, right? Because it was an interesting handle. But I'm going to say the handle was, let's just say Looney Tune, right? They're like, are you the Looney Tune? And I was like, yeah. What's going on, right? And I thought they had maybe like tracked, my internet history and like I would, like, oh, they saw this going to MTV.com or something like that. I'm like, oh man, dude, I don't know what happened, right? So then, they went ahead and they told me, they said like, hey, they went through this process like, hey, do you know you broke these types of laws, right? Do you know these are felonies? Do you know what you did was critical, what you could have done and all that type of stuff?
So these were suits and a police officer?
Suits and a police officer.
How many suits?
Two.
And one police officer.
Right.
Why was two people in suits?
Just what they wore.
Okay. They were like detectives?
No, they worked for a government agency.
Can you say what government agency?
A three-letter agency.
Okay.
Right. A three-letter agency, right? Not as high up as one as you think, right? Let's just say that, right? So, because it was more on a localized level.
Yeah.
Right. And then, so they're there. I'm like, okay, cool. They asked me these questions. They said, you know, you broke these laws, this type of stuff. One thing they really started harping on was, how did I do it? And stuff like that. And I just told them, like, dude, it's in the email, man. Like, like, it's there. I'm sorry. And I like the immediately as a kid, I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And then like,
were you crying?
I was tearing up a little bit behind, right? But I was like, you know what the first thing that happened that goes through your head, right? Is like the first thing that went through my head is like, oh man, I don't want to go to jail. Right. That's what I was just thinking. Like I don't want to meet the toss the salad guy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do any of that stuff. Right. So, and then the general, now this guy, well, like I said, Vietnam general, like had muddy boots, seen some real stuff. He was cool. He was like, so they said, you broke all these laws. You know what I mean? This is what you could face. Here's your sentences. Like, yeah, like, you know, really laying on hard. And then he looks over at them. Right. So his hand's still on his desk. And he turns his elbow and looks over at them. And he's like, gentlemen, the way I see it is he saved you a lot of money. I should be sending you an invoice for this, and we're done here. And he looked over at the cop and he like kind of nodded, right? I don't know if he knew the cop or something like that, maybe. And then, and then he dismissed me, and that was pretty much the end of it, except we had these things called tours. So during that hour of free time and on the weekend, if you had a tour, you get them for doing something wrong, being late to class, something like that. You have to march 1 hour. So one tour is 1 hour with a rifle, right? Like a 20-pound rifle. I got 140 of them.
Oh my gosh. Right. So forever, basically.
Not forever, right? You can knock them out. And luckily, I worked the system a little bit. So like people knocked the extra off. Like I did one for two, that type of stuff. But yeah, so that's the trouble I got into, right? And then I was banned from the ISP for life.
So still banned to this day.
Still banned to this day.
And
as far to my knowledge.
So, but this kind of began a chain of events that led to you getting a call much later on. Is it directly related?
Directly related. So one of those guys. So what happens is it's like when you're on, you're not really on official parole, but and I don't know, maybe this is the case just me. I think it's probably the case, standard operating procedure, right? But I had it like a handler. Right. It wasn't like a parole off.
You didn't even know about it though.
No. Right. But they would check in. Right. Mm-hmm. So like what's weird about the school, like my power of attorney was like to a retired Vietnam Army colonel. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I really had parental. So like I had and every once in a while, I remember I had to do a meeting one time and he just asked a bunch of questions about another ISP and that type of stuff. Right. And
what would they ask?
Like how could you get information on other people? Right, like how, like if you were to go to this ISP, how would you do it? I remember I had a follow-up meeting, that type of stuff, right? And they never asked me to do it because I wasn't allowed to, right? But they said, like, what are some of the things? They asked, like, it's pretty much proctology exam, like what I did and could it be done other places to pull information.
And how detailed did you get with them?
I mean, I told them, like, what I would do, right? But, so that's how that's
And that was basically someone from the government asking about U.S. companies, how to get into them.
I would say, but really from like the threat perspective was really like, could this happen here? Mm. Do you think this could happen here? Do you think this could happen here?
Are you putting your own judgment on it that it was from a threat perspective? Or do you think maybe the government just wanted a door in?
Well, after that, right, I end up being contracted by the government. So like from that, like knowing that.
So describe that. So how did that happen? So you graduate high school or something.
Yeah.
What happened?
So I graduated high school. I kind of like lollygagged in college for like a month or two, right? And then I got a call, right, to work for the government, right, for in the cryptography program, right?
Can you describe a cryptography program describes a lot of different things.
It was like a data nerd crunching a ton of analysis for pattern recognition.
Can you say which agency?
No.
Okay.
I can't, right? But it started out the same one, and then I went to a different one, right? But I was an independent contract.
If you were to have said the agency, would we say, okay, I know what that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, yeah, there aren't too many of them.
Yeah.
So then worked on them. That was really cool, right? Because they pay a buttload, right? I mean,
for a 19-year-old.
Right. And then like, you know, like we got to look at stuff and look at data and look at things. And
what sort of data were you looking at?
A bunch of different ways. I mean, so we were just looking. A lot of times, I didn't necessarily know, right? So what I was really doing is pattern recognition, right? So I can give the example of like burn phones. I mean, a burn phone is a phone like where someone gets a Walmart and they drop, right? Because people were tracking the unique identifier. Like, hey, I know this is James because of his phone number. So I can track his calling pattern or his calling, you know, patterns, right? Who he calls, whatnot, right? But then when James loses his phone, right, these thinks like, oh, okay, cool. That's it. We lost them. Like, you know what I mean? I lost the scent of the government or whoever, right? Just to let you know, like they know. The only person you'd ever try to fool with that is maybe your significant other, right? With a burned phone. I mean, like it's useless because what happens is—
Or if you're a criminal, like a drug dealer or whatever.
No.
No?
No, because I mean, like at that level, right? What you do is you reverse engineer the calling pattern, right? So what happens is it's like, let's say James, you call four people within a certain delimited amount of frequency, right? Certain pattern, you create a calling pattern. Those four people call like three more, and then there's a calling pattern there, and so on and so forth. So then once you can reverse engineer and understand the calling pattern, doesn't matter if James changes his phone number, I know it's still James, just with a new number.
So it's almost like a fingerprint. Like you're not identifying people by the phone number because they might be getting rid of phone numbers frequently.
They were.
So and these are criminals that someone's trying to track for correct. Whatever reason. And you're saying this tree of calls is like a fingerprint. Because what if, I don't know, I'm just asking as a question, what if you and I were to call the same three people? How would your tree be different than my tree?
If you were assuming we'd call, because then it's indicative upon frequency, right, is one layer in the weighting. And then who those three people call and so on and so forth.
Because my call to those three.
Maybe at a certain time of day.
Maybe they would trigger different frequencies of their next layer correct. And the next layer
correct.
After that.
Correct. So like if we're involved, let's say, I mean, think of it, right? Let's think any husband and wife, right, trying to get to soccer practice or pick up the kids on time, right? You know what I mean? Maybe like my wife, I call my wife or something. Cool. All right, cool. And my wife's next call is maybe to our babysitter, right? And then so you know, hey, that call before probably, I mean, I'm making this simple, right? That call before probably came from Eddie because that happens a lot versus when my wife's mother calls her, right? She may call me, right? Or someone, you know, she's not calling the babysitter with a good amount of frequency after that, right?
So, you developed for this agency this ability.
I was one. There was a team.
There was a team of people. You were on it.
Yeah.
Where you developed this ability to kind of identify people not by what number they were using because they were getting rid of their numbers by using burn phones, but by building these trees for essentially everybody. How would you do it for? What's an example where you did it where something happened? Like where because you didn't do it for everybody in the country. You would do it. If you were on a specific case, I imagine.
That is correct, but that is correct.
Can you say, can you give a specific case and what happened?
No.
Okay.
I can't. But, but like there were, like, I mean, there were many cases in which, you know, threats were neutralized, right? Because of things like this. What I can tell you, right, is, you know, somewhat of the same properties, right, that went into that also went into catching meth labs early on, right? So all it was is we just used power consumption at that point, right? So someone's like more than peak. So like there's an average benchmark for a town for that house and then for the town and whatnot. And if you see statistically significant moves in power, right, they're leaving a pattern, right? And we correlated that with, you know, other busts that they had with catching meth labs, right?
I see. So you had a statistic. You had a sampling of successful busts.
Yeah.
And it was, and you matched.
And that makes the model tighter.
You matched energy patterns in a town to those successful busts. Now, if you got a new energy sampling, you'd run it through that database and see, oh, is there a potential? Does it match something that did lead to a successful bust?
That's
and then
correct.
You know you probably have an active meth lab
in the region. To just go check it out.
So
right. The guys on the ground would go check it out.
In the case of these burner phones, though, how does that match with the, like, let's say you were looking, let's say somebody was on the loose and was changing burner phones every day, and it was some high profile criminal, just saying hypothetically. And how would that, what would be the equivalent thing that you would do here?
So one more time.
So there's a high profile criminal on the loose.
Okay.
And he's throwing away a burner phone every day.
All right, so Magneto's on the loose using a burner phone.
Yeah, okay. and every police agency in that area is looking for this guy because he's a well-known criminal, and they finally call in your agency and your team and you to figure out what do we do here.
So these guys had access to those feeds, so that way the guys on the ground could kind of use it for intel. But it almost, you predict with the propensity of like, hey, this is who the person is, right? And this is when he's calling, and this is who he's calling from, right?
How would you predict? So like you would build a tree for, let's say, everybody in the area.
Okay.
Like let's say it's Wyoming.
So here's the thing. A lot of these times, right, the intelligence on the ground, and thankfully to those men and women who serve on the ground, right, can give you a good snapshot, right? They'll say like, hey, look, I know he called from here at this time. And when you get that once, right, you got a good tight signal.
So then you can look at the trees of everybody who called from that area or spot.
Right.
And start looking, and then you can weed out the ones.
Well, then I would know, look, so once I got him once, then I know his calling pattern. I got a picture of it right there, snapshot in time. Who did he call next, whatnot, until that phone died out, or who he called. And then who he called, I may have a snapshot on them. And then now I have like, so trying to find me, you know I called you, James, right? So then I have James's pattern, right? So then I got a snapshot of where mine's coming from, right? So then if there's like some random anonymous that keeps calling, right, then you can predict that that's me.
Right. So the reason it's anonymous is because the number is changing all the time.
Yeah.
So then how does that narrow down into an actual capture? And I do want to say we're inadvertently talking about a high profile case that everybody knows about, but we're not saying what the exact case is. So, but this was a case you were on.
Right. So what I would say is that like there's a few factors that went involved, right? And then one is understanding, hey, who's calling when. I mean, this person, we had family members, we had, you know what I mean? Like there were some things we had, right? Yeah. And then you can look for standard deviations within what, like if you called your mom every night at like 4, right? And that's changing, right? And then it's changing with, so what caused that event, right? So what's the next correlation or the next phone number we can wrap to that? Then it's about understanding, like we had some information as to like, you know, with the call, right? Especially if it's a cellular call, like what tower went over, what time, and to come up with a triangulation of who, where, and what, and then what happened. And if, let's say if someone gets camped out for a little bit, that's when you got them.
And is that what happened? Like you identified a tree. They started making, you noticed a similar tree while they were doing a, you know, camping out somewhere or hiding somewhere. And you were able to essentially GPS in on them and find out where they were.
Correct. Give the guys on the ground the intel they needed to make the move. Because ultimately it's their decision at that point.
Let's stop to take a quick break. We'll be right back. When we use our GPS now, is it significantly weaker than the actual GPS that, let's say, the government is able to use?
What do you mean by weaker?
Like, I mean, at least now it seems pretty accurate. Like you could know within a few feet, but it wasn't always so accurate. It feels like at some point there might have been a separation between the power, the abilities of the government and the data that the government was getting from satellites and the data that individuals using like GPS or whatever.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of times you rent off those same, it's just triangulation, right? Mm-hmm. So the stronger stronger signal you have between those three points, right? It'll make it tighter.
So,
but what we were doing is pairing other data, right? That with that.
Like this tree data from the
calling
burn
phones. Pattern and whatnot, right? That's really when you try to get understand someone's behavior and intent.
So you were kind of doing this sort of activity, saving lives, but using your kind of kind of also elevating all the time. You're hacking, or I don't want to say the word hacking, but your programming skills in this way. Like, how would you say you were improving? Like when you weren't kind of actively working on a case, what would you do to just improve your skills?
I mean, for me, what was cool is like it was all the same, right? What do you mean, like the same joy that I got out of hacking, right? For a purpose, right? Because I didn't start out as a joy, but then I ended up liking it a lot, right? Like I like the whole idea of disintermediating systems, right? The same joy I got in like, all right, cool, we're putting this to a different use, right? And like I'm like detecting patterns, and then that's when it really hit me, like detecting patterns, right? So what I did was, it's like I just bought books. Like back then, people read books a little more, right? So I remember
what are books?
I know, but I remember going to, man, what was the name? It was like Walden Books or something like that. It was like a bookstore that's not around. I don't even know if that was the name. It began with a W, like Walden. Walden Books. It wasn't Barnes & Noble. I go there and I just buy a ton of books, right?
By the way, Barnes & Noble did buy Walden Books.
Did they? Okay, yes. So it was Walden Books. All right, great. So then I went to Walden Books and I remember buying like big books on Pearl and all these different types of languages, not really knowing. But I would read online and they would say like, hey, you need to know this is what this Trojan was written in. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I got to learn this stuff, right? And then there's some great, so what's cool about the, I'm going to use the word hacker, right? Because what's cool about the hacker culture, right, is it's, you know, information should be free, right? Information dissemination, like it should just be free, right? So then like everybody's sharing this stuff, you know what I mean? Like use it. Like this is how you do this. This is how you do this. This is how you do this. Read this. And back then it was all text-based, right? So these boards would just put text-based and they put tutorials on like how, and like, and now that's like YouTube, right? Now YouTube's how to, but back then it was just like reading all these text-based files and these websites on how to do certain things. And then you play with it too, right? Well, because what was cool is it's like you could test. All right, cool. Here's the thing. I'm going to create this shell. Is it doing like the same? Is the script running the same as intended? Oh, no, it's not. Oh, I wonder why. Oh, I got to learn this. You know what I mean?
I feel like a lot of these, having read some of the literature, like let's say in the magazine 2600,
love
kind of
described
magazine. A lot of these
yeah.
sort of techniques. It seems like you get a technique and maybe 80, let's be even fair to them, 80 or 90% of companies or people have already blocked, you know,
right.
the ability of those scripts to work. But you could try a lot and test to see which 10 to 20% still have these doors
or
open.
Even better is you, like with code, right? You iterate off someone else's start, right? That's why the open source movement's great.
So what does that mean?
So like someone puts out a script, an idea like that, like to your point, right? That may have worked, but 90% of people have already blocked it. Cool, but what if I added another layer to it, another line, another string to it, then how could I change it? Because I'm close, right? I'm now like 90% of people block, so this is something, right? So, and I, you know, the code base is open, right? So is there a way to hack this? Literally, like use the word, right? Hack this to do something else to for my benefit or to fit or to intrude. So then that way now it's back open to then now like only 2% of the people can block it.
So like what's an example?
I mean, there's many examples on like how you can do this with different types of software, but I'm not going to talk about those specific ones, but I'm going to talk about like, just think of the open source movement, right? How people are iterating off each other's like Bitcoin, you know what yeah. I mean? The Bitcoin source is open, right? It's just people are using it different and they're changing it around differently, putting more secure elements and then like it really iterating off other people's work.
You know, and it's interesting. I don't want to spend too much time on Bitcoin. I think it's a fascinating topic and there's almost like you could spend too much time diving into it.
Straight, yeah.
But it does seem like other than there's 871 cryptocurrencies out there.
Right.
And zero, and they're all getting traded every single day, all 871 of them, Bitcoin being obviously the most popular and probably in some ways the most secure because it's been around the longest and people trust it. But most of those 871 are being traded by people who haven't read the code. And it seems like in the code, there's a lot of, just from what I've seen, is a lot of backdoors that most of these cryptocurrencies are scams.
Yeah, I would say, I would.
Like 98% of them.
I would say a lot of them are unsecure, right? And the goal of them isn't necessarily to make greater good, it's just to make a quick buck.
Yeah, because there's so many ways to manipulate how to hide transactions, how to hide how many coins are being printed, who has what coin, and so on.
Absolutely.
As well as to see actually the names or the email addresses or IP addresses of who's making transactions. So there's a lot of privacy
and
issues.
Just like my ISP example, early days. Early
right.
days again in a different place.
Yeah, because a cryptocurrency could be thought of now as sort of the ISP of currency.
Exchange.
So it's interesting. So I throw that out as a warning sign that the same issues and almost the same techniques exist, but they kind of modify themselves according to how the world modifies.
And some of those old techniques that were blocked, right, for like you said, 90% may be applicable to this new Wild West.
Right, right. So because again,
those same attacking.
The fundamental structure is the same. The internet, the idea behind this sharing of data, the whole idea of the internet initially from like the 60s initial white papers is that we should freely share data with each other.
Right.
Mostly academics wanted to freely share, you know, scientific CERN research. And there weren't really the protections put into place that correctly that a closed system might put into place. And once everybody got onto this decentralized approach, kind of, it's just going to be natural that these sort of holes would be open.
Absolutely.
So you basically spent years kind of, if not studying every hole, because eventually all of those get covered up, but kind of the ways of studying them. You sort of meta-studied it.
Yeah, because once you learn something, then it's education, right? Once you learn something, you know how it applies to something else, and then you kind of innovate. Like, oh man, you know what I could do this for? I could use this for this. I could use this for Y. Instead of kind of taking one idea, and it's like theoretical physics, right? Or let's take Nash, right? Do Nash equilibrium, right? I mean, the guy wasn't trying to solve economics, right? But he did, right?
He just wanted to meet girls.
Yeah, right. A little more than that. I think he wanted a Fields Medal or something like that, right? But he didn't know that's what he'd get the Nobel Prize for. So and what's cool about that is it's like when everything's logic and formulaic based, right? The variables change, right? But the fundamental elements that make them work and pull those variables together, right? Could be applicable to other types of, you know, like industries or to solve other types of problems.
So there's two issues I want to ask about.
Yeah.
There's two whole areas of your career I want to ask about. One is you've somehow transformed from this agency hacking life to military.
Right.
And then from that you transformed and you had some amazing experiences. And from that you transformed into being an extremely successful entrepreneur, and you've sold several companies, and they were kind of connected to what you were just talking about in terms of the pattern recognition, except on maybe customer behavior and so on. But I want to actually, just for a few minutes, skip ahead to right now.
Sure.
I mean, it seems like my theory is that everybody's so concerned about missiles and bullets and guns and warfare. But it seems like, and we saw this in this current election, or at least we started thinking about it, it seems like all the wars are actually ongoing right now, but they're being fought with data.
Absolutely. So think of it. I mean, look, when you look at your Bank of America account, right, what are you really looking at?
Yeah, just a computer is telling me is opening up some
data,
ones and zeros,
right?
and spitting it out into some form I understand.
And I call that my net worth now.
Yeah,
right?
Your entire worth, your worth as a human is how people equate it usually.
Right. My net worth is now in data, right? I literally, I have a house or maybe some assets I have. Cool, I have that. But for the quote unquote, what used to be cash portion is now in data, right? So then—
Right, because it's not like if you made— Let's say you made $10 million selling a company. It's not like you're ever going to see $10 million in cash in your garden shed.
Right.
It's only a number in a computer.
Correct. Right? That's data. We come down to it. So then, capitalism and whatnot in our society, that's data. Right? That's what we're basing currency off of. Right? So then when you're thinking about this, it's like, what more efficient way— let's not even say war. Let's say what more efficient way to screw somebody than to alter or augment their data profile, right? Like, let's say I could hack your credit report, right? Or hack your bank account, right? Or, like it's seen prevalently, I turn the power off to your house, right? You know what I mean? Those are forms of hacks and data that are controlling how we live.
You said you see this more prevalently, turning the power off on my house. Is that true?
Look, so especially with the advent of smart grids and whatnot, you're going to see a lot of those are controlled by computer systems.
Right.
Right. So, I think we're seeing this a lot in other countries that are, going through some things right now.
Because let's say
Ukraine.
Yeah. So let's say in the U.S., a lot of power grids are built with the latest and greatest. So presumably you have to be pretty sophisticated to get into them. But the Ukraine is kind of, I'm just guessing, and I think also we're probably using a name of a different country in place of another country.
Correct.
But they're just hobbling together routers from the 90s probably to do the internet connectivity to power the grid or to connect the grid. And it's those routers themselves that still have open holes in them.
Yeah. So I mean, and I'm going to speak for a lot of other people. How much is it? Look, on your device at home, right? I'm talking to everyone at home right now, right? On your device at home, you have a ton of security. You got all this stuff, Mac, Windows, whatever you have, your phone, you're all secured. You may even pay extra for a virus scan or whatnot, like to in under the perception that you're secure, right? I want to ask everyone, right? When's the last time you updated the firmware on your router?
Yeah, it's interesting. So every home, by the way, has a router because that's how they get Wi-Fi.
Right.
So Wi-Fi is like spreading out through the air.
Right.
The router kind of pulls it down and then spreads it out for your own private internet use.
Right.
But nobody, like I've never once updated, let's say I had a router for years. Okay, I'm a weird story because I move around a lot.
Right.
But like if I had a house and I had a router from some phone company for the past 5 years, I've probably never updated it.
Right.
And if it was built... If the router was built, let's say, more than a few years ago, it probably doesn't update on its own. You probably have to manually do it.
A lot of times you have to update the firmware. Right?
So,
there may be small updates that'll do it, right, with these new smarter routers, right? But a lot of times you got to manually update the firmware.
And probably the first 20 versions of all that firmware were exposable at
right.
some point.
So look, because that's where I'm going to go, right? If I'm hacking you at home, I'm going to hit your router. Least secure, and guess what? All the packets of data go over it. Even encrypted. And I mean, like there's ways to break encryption, right? If I just get the packet stream, then I own the data. And then it's whether or not if I can make a signal out of it or not.
Well. Also, there's software packages for taking a bunch of packets and reassembling them into their yeah. most likely messages, like passwords
Absolutely.
Or logins and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's how like keystroke loggers and things like that work.
Absolutely. Libraries. There's libraries and libraries of this stuff, right? So if I'm going to, that's a big, if I'm going in, I'm going in through the router, right? What's even scarier, in my opinion, and it's my opinion about this whole situation is it's, if you think about who are like the Fortune 500s and all these large companies, the majority of them use the same technology, right? For those routers, right? For those, now granted, they may be more secure. They have other layers, right? But if everybody's using... let's say if everybody's using a Nabisco router, right? Or
Nabisco router.
Nabisco.
Or a router you can eat.
Nabisco router, right? Or an HD router, right? Like, you know what I mean? Or like a, you know, this, if all these big companies are using this because, and they're under the premise, right? These CTOs are kind of like, oh man, no one ever got fired for using Bisco. You know what I mean? They're one of the largest companies in the world. No one ever got fired for using their systems, right? And granted, I'm messing the name up on purpose,
yeah.
right? That's cool, but it's like kind of like GMO food, right? In the sense that one virus can wipe a lot of it out. Right. So like if there's one missing one protocol that's messed up, right? That's not randomized and whatnot, right? If I can get in per se, theoretically, right? I mean, there's other layers that go into like getting into a load balancer and whatnot, right? I mean, I'm just making this simple so people can understand, right? But if everybody's using the same thing and there's a hole in one of them, right? Theoretically, right? I would just keep trying until I found the one that's like, if I found one hole, it might've been even a small one, found one way, one intrusion method, right? I'll keep trying that at other large companies until like one guy is maybe not be as secure as the other one. And then that hole's still open here.
So it's having this, it's like anything you want to get better on in life. You build up this repertoire of like hundreds or thousands of skills.
Right.
And you're given a situation like, you know, oh, we have this kind of router with this kind of company with this number of people that probably has this sort of backup system. I'm going to try this set of dozen or so strategies to see if I could break in because this is what has worked, you know,
once,
for me roughly.
Exactly.
So,
right.
And you keep trying it until you hit.
Exactly.
So what about the other technique of phishing? So I send an email to you and say, hey, Mr. X, I just saw a video of you. You should check it out. And here's the link to the video. And then you click on it and now it gives me all of your, you know, allows me to put like a cookie on your computer or a bot on your computer or whatever. You know, comparing the two types of strategies, what do you see more?
I hear more, right, on an individual basis of phishing, right? I mean, I think that hits a lot of people. And I mean, that's kind of, I mean, that one is, I mean, like, it's tough in one aspect. It's tough in one aspect to say, to clear that out, because there's a big human element, right? There's a decision factor that goes into it, right? Now, there may be algorithms, whatnot, where we can highly detect, hey, this is a phishing scam, use these types of words sent from this IP. And, you know, a lot of that works, right? But, I mean, every once in a while, they're going to fall through. Someone's going to try something that worked. And look, what's the marginal cost of a phishing scam?
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
You can send out thousands of emails.
Yeah, I mean, email's free, right? So, on a certain scale, email's free. So then they keep trying. They get smart about it. They find a demo that works, and they just hit that demo, right? And they hit one message. It's really like evil email marketing is what phishing is.
Even worse, really, because, yes, it's email in the marketing in the sense that you're sending out lots of emails, but then specifically you have this malicious link inside, clicked on it, something downloads onto your computer, which starts, you know, hides itself and then starts uploading everything you do.
Well, like the most important thing you do is just be aware, right? I mean, look, if all of your net worth, right, and growing these days, a lot of your personal information is you're trusting it in the cloud or like in data, in essence, right? I'm trusting all my people, Instagram, right? I'm trusting all that, my birth date across multiple sources, my money, right? My pictures of my children and whatnot. You should, with giving up that much security, right? You need to just be a little responsible and like almost do some homework as to like techniques, and not just like put your trust in the government or this big knowing corporation to like take care of your data. You need to do some homework and understand like, hey, no matter what, I'm going to get phished. I'm going to get social engineered, right? Someone's going to call my home and say they're like, they're the energy company. They need to know my MAC address off my router or something like that. You know what I mean? Like you may get those calls. Like, so as while we loosen up our information and the security, like it needs to be accounted for somewhere. And that's with our own personal responsibility, I think.
I mean, I was once looking at investing in a company that deals with the issue of how to fight bot armies. So a bot army is when your entire company, every computer is basically infested with a silent, let's call it an application,
right,
that on a given signal is ready to do something. Like, let's say shut down all the computers at the company or send all the emails to some other address or do something. And this company was basically saying that 400 of the Fortune 500, the top 500 biggest companies, are probably infested with these bot armies that were probably unleashed by these phishing attacks. And I asked them, well, can you protect these companies? And their response was interesting. First off, the company was all PhDs, but their company said, the guy I asked said, no matter how smart we are, the guys who are attacking these companies are smarter.
See, and maybe there's a little bias here. I would say no to that. I wouldn't say that they're necessarily smarter. I think, like anything, man, people get caught up in bureaucracy, right? And then people like intentions change, and then like then I'm not really about securing the company. I am, right? It's my job, it's my livelihood, but I'm doing it so much just to keep my job, versus there's someone out there who thinks they're gonna like gain all this power or gain all this monetary value from doing it, right? I wouldn't say they're smarter. It's just probably just a different allocation of someone's time.
So I wanna get back to the present time in a second, but first,
sure.
How'd you go from the quote unquote agencies to military?
Do you mean
or military usage of your abilities?
I mean, so a lot of the times, right? If you were to swipe an ESN number off a phone and duplicate it, whatnot, you had to be there.
So what's a case where you had to do that? Where you specifically had to do it?
I'm not going to say. What I will say is, it's like there's a lot of clandestine operations, and my hat goes off to a lot of those people who even right now are on the ground helping those operations out. But it's just like sometimes you need someone who can do the op, and sometimes it's better to have the person who knows how to do it in the event of a variable change in a scenario, right, to figure it out. So like if you were just like back remember those Nokia green phones, the snake game?
I don't know that.
You know, there's a phone, a green screen, had a snake game on Nokia, right? I mean, I think everybody had one. Maybe you didn't, but those, you just swipe the ESN number on those things, right? And then you could like duplicate that phone, right?
But on your own computer.
Right. But a lot of times the phone companies, I don't know, like you'd have to, I'm probably speaking out of turn here. I'm saying theoretically, maybe that's one instance that you would have to go on the ground for.
What type of target?
Probably something like national security, right? Something big.
It's like a terrorist.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. I mean,
so I'm sorry. I'm drilling. I know I'm drilling for specifics. We're keeping you totally anonymous. So you started doing these more clandestine operations. Did that involve, you know, you obviously were traveling to other countries where, you know, you.
I'm not going to say I was traveling to other countries.
Okay, you're not going to say that. All right. So, given what you knew from your compatriots, what's a hypothetical scenario that you could have happened?
A hypothetical scenario that could have happened, right? Is, I mean, you need to gain access to, let's say, a terminal, right? That is offline. Someone's, you know, responsible with their data and they never put it online. Something like that, right? You'd have to go in and try to crack it on the fly where you can't do it remote because there's no connection.
Would that be, would there be like a time thing? Like, I picture this James Bond scenario. You only have like 15 seconds to like hack into a computer.
No. They weren't like, look, theoretically, like, because I don't know, I wasn't involved in any of these and I don't know anything about this stuff. I'm just talking, we're just in playland right now.
We're just in playland.
I would say that, yeah, what would happen is these guys are probably smart. You probably have open windows of time to go in and do it. And they do homework, someone working at the, like, who's a cleaner at the place, who's access, right? Who's been there for 6 months, right? Because that's a job that turns over a lot, right? With multiple different faces. I mean, you know, has time. I mean, like, at that time, you have all night.
Right.
Right.
That's true.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like, Hollywood hypes a lot of things up, right? But I'm not going to say that those haven't happened. I'm just saying, I don't know.
First, I have to ask the question: are you still involved in any?
I can't say that.
Fair enough. So you're decided to get more entrepreneurial at one point.
Of course.
And what types of companies did you start?
E-commerce, right? So a lot of the stuff was started an e-commerce company, right? That sold car parts, right? And then that got acquired by someone else. What I was doing, right, is I liked car parts. Fast and Furious was a rage. And I wanted these car parts, man. I'm like, all right. So I'm scouring the internet how to get them cheaper. I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm like, all right, cool. I mean, this part number seems to be a common denominator here. What if I just always scraped, right, these websites, right, to understand which to get the parts, right? So then I created something for myself to say, hey, where can I get this the cheapest, right? A crawler. Right?
So you basically create your own search engine to search for the cheap.
It started out as like, I knew the websites to go to, mm-hmm. right? And then I would scrape them, right? And then cool. So then I know where the cheapest one was versus me looking all the time, right? Because there's a lot. And then I started thinking that was cool. I had buddies like, dude, where'd you get that so cheap? I'm like, oh. I hear it. I'm like, oh, man, can you just get it for me, dude? I'm like, all right, cool. So then I saw like a business in it, right? I'm like, all right, cool. Whereas most people would have like, I don't know, just like waited to get a supplier deal and like applied for it and all this type of stuff, right? I didn't. I'm like, all right, cool. If I can offer the cheapest price, some arb here, right? And just arbitrage here, right, in pricing. So then I consolidated, created a site that did that. And then went ahead, scraped, found different prices, right? And then I started pulling in, what's cool about these manufacturers, I started pulling in other things like the manuals and stuff like that, right? And long story short, someone else who sold more than just car parts, right, liked the technology and they purchased it.
And they liked the technology for the car parts or did they try to just
do it for everything else?
They
did it for everything else.
Wow.
Right, so they were doing it for like all types of home parts, like a washing machine, microwave, plate, AC adapters, whatnot, right?
So what does it end up looking like? It looks like you're going to the site and it's almost like it's their product, but they're...
They actually had deals with suppliers. So they was scanning their supplier deals with actually what was out there on the net, because a lot of times what they liked it the most for, to be honest with you, wasn't necessarily the pricing. It's good to keep competitive pricing, understand what other sites are doing, but they liked it because it pulled the manuals and all this stuff from the websites, right? So that way you knew how to install the part when you got home. It was early on before. Like now everybody does that. Everybody's got YouTube videos on like how to install this part and whatnot on their products.
I still can't figure anything out.
Right. I mean, but this is back when like, you know, I had to look at these white PDFs and like, so they pulled in all that and then pulled in like the other information to append to like the descriptions, right?
And so that was company number one. What was company number two?
All right. So company number two, right, was pretty much like me just trying to like take in. So I worked at Wall Street for a little bit, right? And then me trying to take.
When you say you worked at Wall Street, like hedge funds, mutual funds, banks?
I worked for bank and hedge funds, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, like that, that was cool. Big data set to play with.
Okay. Yeah. So let's get an example like data used by a hedge fund. How does it, other than just straight pattern recognition, like, oh,
when Google goes up, Amazon goes up, that type of stuff, right?
Other than that kind of basic pattern recognition, what's the sort of most sophisticated thing you've seen on the hedge fund side for making money?
When
they use data
alpha,
that the average person can't use?
I mean, they'll purchase like data from, so like let's say there's companies that aggregate data, right? And they'll purchase and see if underlying company, like, I mean, I'm taking, for example, you ever been on one of these websites where like they show you like your bank account and all your expenses for free and whatnot, right? You know what I mean? If you sign up for it, it'll show me like these cool charts, right? So those guys resell your data, a lot of them. I'm not saying all of them do, but they do, right? And they say they can see your Sprint bill. Let's just say like your Sprint bill or some telecom bill, right? Why? And then they sell that data, right? To see if that goes down, up or down, right? You know what I mean? Like, hey, this is the benchmark of how much use this supplier. Is that going up or down, right? Or is there a significant signal in that, right? Or if...
So I'm a hedge fund and... let's say there's 30 of these companies.
Right.
I buy the data from 30 of these companies, and I could see in general, for some reason, Sprint. We're just making up Sprint.
Right.
Sprint seems to be making deals or cutting discounts to most of their customers.
Or I'm starting to see less people show up in using Sprint. In what aggregates that data, then maybe they may be using other carrier. They may not give you the exact name of the carrier, but the other.
So it's not quite insider trading, but it's data that most people don't have and they could potentially make a trade.
Yeah, I'm sure they could buy that data too, right? There's that type of stuff. I mean, like one of it, another one, right, that I'm just like, that comes to mind is it's like when you're thinking about that type of data, right? So what are you getting, right? I'm getting a third party data, right? There's a lot of times you can do scrubs from like credit agencies, right? Where you can come up with intent signals of finding out. And this is for like on a more macro level, right? Of like understanding like is like in a particular market. Let's say I had a company and let's say they're public or even if they're not, and maybe I was going to make a private investment and they're heavily saturated in a few area codes, right? Cool. Maybe pair some credit reporting data to see if like discretionary wallet sizes, right, are getting smaller or larger, right, that type of stuff, right? Or like maybe housing, right? They like kind of look, and a lot of these research analysts like pull this data and they resell it to like the buy side guys resell it, right? But or pulling data from like, you know, just housing industry, right? Like Zillow probably has a great data set for that stuff. I'm pretty sure one of their APIs is open, right? And maybe you can pull some data from that to understanding, hey, market prices and how they may affect like an what's the company that makes the pink insulation, OC Corning or something like that?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, would predict like.
So that's interesting because even search query data on Zillow might be interesting. If the average net price of a house that people are searching for on Zillow in a certain area, that totally affects all the companies involved in housing in that area.
Right. And then which one does it correlate with the most? Like maybe new home building, right? Correlates the guy who makes insulation. Right. You know what I mean? If that's a majority of his business. And then you just got to do like, you know, real analysis, real homework, right? To figure out if there's, it's really just trying to edge to get that alpha, right?
What about, is there anything, what can they do now? Like, is there anything, you know, like everybody uses mobile phones for everything. Is there anything kind of mobile specific where hedge funds can get like a little bit of an edge? You know, it seems like so many apps.
Yeah, so look, check this out. So there's a lot of apps. Like I always beware of anything free, right? That's what your parents told you, right? Beware of anything. It's not free. There's no free lunch, all that stuff. There's no free app, right?
Right, like even the flashlight app allows you, the flashlight app creator to open up your video without you knowing it.
Right, or yeah, exactly. Or like allow access to my microphone, right? I mean, there's this, like it's crazy. I met with this one company that they were trying to allow access to microphone, right? It's kind of like a Shazam. And then it would pick up inaudible signals. So that way, what they were trying to do is they were trying to trace if you actually sat and saw and listened to a commercial. right? So there'd be an inaudible signal, kind of like Shazam, right? I mean, like an inaudible signal that goes out. That's like a message, like, you know, this McDonald's commercial aired at this time, ha, 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 ha. You know, like one of those types of things, right? And then your phone would pick it up because you have some free app that allowed access to microphone, and it would pick up that inaudible signal, right? So the company trying to do that. So when you do that, right, you offer a ton of access. Like now I know, like, hey, if I'm playing, I don't know, like some I'm trying to think of drums versus zombies or something like that, right? If I'm playing one of those games and it's free, there's certain access to my phone that I'm giving up, right? And it could be like location information, right? Lat long, right? They know where I am, right? Which is crazy because back in the old censorship days, right, they were thinking no one would ever give up their location. But now people, we volunteer it.
That location's on all the time.
Oh, location's on all the time. I let Google know wherever the heck I'm going. Like if I'm going to Google, I like using the maps or any map app, right? Or if I'm allowing location, right? I know where these people are, right? And then if they're, check this. So if they're at a certain location for a certain period of time at a certain time, right? So if you're at a lat long, right, from like 10 p.m. to like 5 a.m., majority of the time, I'm predicting that that very well may be what you call home. Right. And if you like, and so on and so forth. Right. So now they can predict, like, okay, cool. Like their home, like they may be more apt to, I mean, I don't know what you'd use that for. There's probably a lot of things. Right. But like in commercial applications. Right. But like, oh, hey, a bunch of people in this demo are at home. Maybe they watch TV more at home. Right. Or maybe they're sitting down spending more leisurely time. That's when we market those type of people. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that you give up your phone when you give those free. I mean, like, I think it's worth the 90. If someone's giving you something for free, if they're like, think of that trade, right? Like how much do they spend in software development, all that stuff, right? And if they're willing to give it to you for free, right, that is probably, to them, that's worth that dev and CapEx and creating the app and then like what they could make for like the $2.99, right? That's worth something to someone else, right?
I mean, there's even kind of nefarious sort of applications I could think of just right away that would just be very dangerous if someone knew it across the board about everyone.
Well, I mean, here, that's another way to hack people's phones.
Right. And I guess that happens all the time. Yeah. These apps are all over the place.
Right. Be careful. I mean, like, there's trusted. I mean, like, you just got to be responsible.
So company number two, you sold company number one. Did you have to stay at the company that bought your company?
At company number two, no, I mean, that was like more one-off deals, right, and whatnot, right? And then like someone just saw like the technology and they said they purchased it, right?
And you know, again, this is all anonymous. Did you make enough money to do well? Like, were you happy with it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Each one of these things I made, like the first one, I was really young, right? So I made and I blew.
Okay, welcome to the club.
Right, I made and blew. And then most recently, right, came coming off an acquisition. And yeah, that one definitely teed it up. I could choose. I mean, it's awesome.
That's great. Well. So what was company number two?
So it's an artificial intelligence company, right? And we went in, it was one of the largest e-commerce companies out there, right? And really just tying, it's the same thing we've been talking about the whole time, right? It's pattern recognition and in an artificially intelligent, scalable, right, using parallel computing way to detect who's most, instead of detecting threats, right, using events in an ecosystem to detect threats, using events to find patterns in herds of people to give them the right product, right, at the right time, right, at the right price.
And so let's say you had a huge amount of data, you would be able to say, oh, okay, this lady in Iowa is not likely to buy a computer, a $2,000 computer in February, but maybe she would buy one in November. Or
someone who came in on the site through a Google keyword of like, I don't know, cool pets, just happened to click. And let's say I'm selling like computers in this scenario, like you're giving me, right? And there's two ways to look at it, right? They're on a brand new Mac, right, or the latest computer, right, and they've updated to the latest software or whatnot, right, may not be in the market for a new computer, right, versus someone who's mid-range, or the same could be said about the complete inverse, right, someone who's on like an eMachines, no offense, right, that was a great company at the time, the Cal stuff, right?
I did like them, actually, yeah, I had one.
Yeah, they're cool, I mean, cool marketing concept, right? Someone who's on eMachines, right, who's on like, I don't know, Netscape, right, browser or something like that, right? I mean, I'm giving a crazy example. Also may not be in the market for a computer because they obviously don't value it. Or someone in the mid-range, right? Maybe, right? So it's understanding the patterns at those levels. Like, you'd be surprised at how statistically significant the patterns are by device type, by browser type, pairing those in probability trees, right? Like coming up with like this device type on this browser, right? Coming in through this traffic source.
So basically, let me try to reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
So let's say someone does buy a new Apple computer. They buy a new laptop.
Okay.
Now I know 20 things about them. And let's just say
one of them is maybe their wallet size.
Yeah, so I might know a lot of things about them. Apple might know a lot of things about them because they just freely give the information.
Right, but you give that information too every time you interact with the site. I know your device type.
Okay, so Apple now is able to say, well, these 10,000 people bought this laptop and this is what they look like. They look like they have, each one of them has 20 factors that define them.
Right.
And one factor might be where they live. One factor might be what they're upgrading from. One factor might be the time of year. One factor might be whether they're male or female, what their age is, where they went to school, what they're willing to spend on extras and accessories. So that's the 20 factors. Now you get an unknown potential customer. You get the data through a variety of ways. Maybe you have a cookie that has given you that data. Maybe you have an email list that's given you that data. You found them on some other site where you bought that data, or they visited and deposited that data. You're able to match this new set of 20 variables to your database of successful samples. The successful ones are the people with the 20 variables that match a purchase of an Apple computer. And you could say, this person most closely matches the type of person who has bought an Apple laptop. And then you're able to, target them with an email, or what do you do?
So a couple things, right? So let's say I'm selling shoes, right? And I have a $50 shoe, $100 shoe, and a $300 shoe, right? Different options, right? Let's say you were coming in on a certain device, and I'm just gonna make one up, right? I'm gonna say you're coming in on Mr. X computer, right? Mr. X computer costs, let's say, I don't know, it costs like $8,000, right? You're coming in on Mr. X computer, right?
And you could see that right away in the server anyway.
See it right away. And I also have a ballpark of location, right? If you have location services on, I really do. But even through what IP you're coming in on. Mm. Then another pattern I have, right, is time of day. Like, what time of day are they coming on? Each one's a different profile, right? So like a guy who came in on Mr. X computer at noon at lunch may not be the same guy who comes on from Mr. X computer at like 3 a.m. their time. They may be two totally different people, right? Like, or two different types of people. But anyway, surf with me here for a little bit, right? They, on average, when they interact with, you know, like whatever I'm selling online or whatever product I'm selling, they may interact and purchase good, like the $300 shoe all the time. You have another person comes on, like, let's say a mid-level device, right? And I'm just making, this is uber simple. It's not just device. Device isn't know-all. There's like a ton of end factors, but just to make the point. Mid-level device, right? Maybe they update their browser, so on and so forth. And then like they interacted with keywords like search cheap computers and whatnot, taking all those types of factors together, like, okay, cool, he's a mid-range person. Like, let's offer the second shoe to him, right? Because I know based on, like, there's a correlation with the type of computer. He's a mid-level computer. He's probably a mid-level shoe guy. But think of it that way. But it could be differently. It's like we kind of parallel compute, taking all these different factors and dimensions and come up with which trees in the forest, right, are the most statistically significant, and then we personalize the products to that offering.
I see. So they come to the site and they see, based on their data and your analysis of their data, you put up the products they are most statistically likely to buy based on who previously bought these products.
Correct. And then as you get more data, then those targets, right, those signals get stronger and stronger, and maybe I'll find more clusters, more different groups, right?
I love this stuff so much. You know why? Because this reminds me so much of how game programs evolved.
Yeah.
So it used to be like chess programs would just build a tree. Oh, they can move here, then they can move here, then they can move here, and they would analyze, you know, who is potentially winning. But what ended up happening was games like checkers, backgammon, Othello, and even Go, recently, they would take, let's say, 10,000 successfully won games. They would take a middle middle of the game position, and they would know that white is later going to win. And they would put that in the category, oh, white is going to later win this, and black is later going to win this. And they would analyze the 20 features about this position that they could sort of quantify. And then given a new position, let's say I'm in a new game with you, who's better, you or me? Well, I can make this move or I can make that move. It'll run it into the database of, we'll statistically match each move against all of the winning positions, the positions that we know are winning, and we'll make the move that is statistically closest to a winning position. And that's the move we would make. And that's how all those games work now.
Oh, absolutely. And then like with those gaming especially, it's really like for each move, it's accounting for that variable change, right? So like right now, white's going to win. Black moved here. Right now, black's got an 80% chance of winning. They totally flipped the board on him, right? Because of that move, depending on how, like, because there's only so many moves that white can now make. You know what I mean? And like, so like, I was looking at I was talking with a friend, and you know, he's got a cool industry, right? Like with the professional sports, right? And then like when we were just talking about the NFL, right?
Oh my God, you could totally do this with like fantasy sports, everything.
Totally. And then like think of, I mean, like a part of it, I mean, what else we were talking about, like would be cool, like to overlay stats, right? Because you know, and because you know, they have trackers on the shoulder pads, right? And then understanding like, hey, in this lineup, right? So like, let's say when the New York Giants, right, line up in the dime, and the Philadelphia Eagles, right, my team, who were the best team in football, you know, line up in the shotgun, right, and in this certain formation, because you know where the players are, because each player's wearing one of these RFID trackers too, right? When they line up like this, and you know, like the left tackle's leaning forward, right, then there's a statistically significant chance that like the Giants are going to win this play, right? Or that like, or 9 times out of 10, there should be like a big play 20 yards or more, right?
So it seems like that is a multi-billion-dollar company that could be bought right there in either fantasy sports or sports betting.
Absolutely. But even more,
using the exact same technology.
But even just giving the viewer a better experience too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but let's say I don't care about that. I just want to build a $1 billion company. I can use these exact same algorithms that are used to win checkers or go,
right,
or analyze customers. You know, it's basically this multi-factor. It's the same, by the way, it's the same techniques as speech recognition. That's how speech recognition works. I know what it sounds like when someone says hello, because hello's got, you know, 20 different factors in the signal graph. And now when someone else says hello, I'm going to match it against my database of words. Oh, it looks statistically likely that this person just said hello. And that's how that works. They're all using the same statistical techniques.
And statistical techniques and other mathematical equations. Like my hero, right, is this guy named Pam Dirac, Paul Adrian Maurice Dirac, right? Won the 1933 Nobel Prize in quantum physics. And he, you know, he had the Dirac delta function. And we had a quote that said, you know, like, I forgot, I'm going to butcher it, right? But what I took from it, and I think about it every day, is like, you know, these methods of theoretical physics, right, should be applied to everyday use. It's something along the lines like that, right? Like someone can, like, that's not his exact quote, but that was the gist of it, right? Is what if we applied, like, and then what I take from that is like, what if we apply these methods of theoretical physics, right, to everyday problems? Like, so one that I've used before, right, is there's a algorithm, right? There's a math formula, right, involved to detect when heat or electricity runs through a wire, at which point it predicts will get hot on the wire first, right? And that same one you can overlay with you got to do some other math in the foreground to set it up to get those variables and that formula, but to predict what's going to be popular. Like literally what's hot, like not literally what's hot, but like what's hot in pop culture,
okay,
right?
Because imagine I had data about how movie trailers were shared in the month before a movie was released. So let's say I know exactly there was this number of shares in email, this number of shares on Twitter, this number of shares on YouTube or views on YouTube. That's the kind of speed of the heat entering the wire and the amount of heat entering the wire, the width of the wire.
The available market, right?
I can see how hot this movie is going to be at the box office. It's the same thing with what you're talking about sports. It's all the same technique. The reason why it works in theoretical physics is because most particles are found, nobody could see the particles. Right. They only notice statistically that something happened. Right. And what they predicted would happen with a particle of that mass would happen happened. So again, why don't you right now start a fantasy sports company? I'll invest in that. I'll write you a check right now.
All right,
for a
man.
Fantasy sports company.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I look, I just love solving problems, right? To me, a lot of this stuff is the same, right? A lot of the, I mean, it's just like taking massive data sets and coming up with understanding what the target is or what the optimal function is. Like someone wants to make more money, increase viewership, increase retention, but reduce customer churn.
It reminds me though of, again, this kind of trend from, which has been brought up in this podcast a bunch of times, this trend from humans to data. So rather than humans predicting, oh, the Giants are going to beat the Eagles or the Eagles are going to beat the Giants, it's much more accurate, like 1,000 times more accurate, to make use of the data based on thousands and thousands or millions of units of data you have upon previous games that they've played.
Absolutely.
So it seems like you can start applying these things to every type of decision-making, from health to box office predictions to the stock market, and I feel like the first wave of pattern recognition in this of the stock market has kind of been come and gone.
Right.
But
right,
I think the next wave hasn't even begun, and it just seems like sky's the limit. So I know your time is a little bit limited. I want to ask you two questions.
Sure, go for it.
A, I know you have a theory, so we can talk about it. It's not a direct experience, but a theory, maybe based on what you know and what other people know, but it's still a theory. What do you think is the real story of Osama bin Laden? I know it's out of the loop.
Yeah,
here.
So like I said, yeah, I don't know, right? I don't know, like officially, right?
Just your theory based on your varied experiences.
Here's what I will say, right? And if you look at it, like, you know, look at a bird's eye view of the place. Right, you're in a town. If you, James, right, if I went over your house, right, and there were huge high walls, right, and guards patrolling all around, right, what do you think? What does that look like? Does that look like a palace to you?
But maybe if I'm Osama bin Laden, maybe I just want like guards protecting me, so no one rushes or investigates or spies. I just want kind of people around to make sure nobody comes in.
Sure. Maybe you're creating a big wall and a moat, and you just don't want anyone to come in, right? And what you're doing is you're drawing. And let's say you're also probably the most hunted person out there, right? Would you still do that? Would you still draw that attention to yourself?
No, probably not. I'd probably live in a hole somewhere.
Right. Not outside of a town. And whatnot. And, you know, like, I mean, and like, there's a ton of people go back and forth on this, right? I'm not saying like what happened, or didn't happen. I'm just saying, you know, kind of like be responsible with the data that's out there, right? And make, you know, like your own decision. Like there's a guy, Ralph Waldo Emerson, right? I love the dude, right? He created this thing called the American Scholar. And he said, like, don't ever become a reclusive thinker commenting from afar. If something looks a little interesting, right? Voice it. And what I'm saying is, it's like, to me, taking all the facts out, right, of you know what was said, that looks more like a jail, right? That this guy was potentially in a jail, right?
Held by a government,
held by a government, right? And then maybe because he had a lot of data, and in eradicating this person, look, it was so valuable. Like, let's say you had like the head of anything, right? They know everything for a lot. I mean, it was their op. Right. Yeah. So maybe there's some data you can get in, and maybe this person for exchange, right, is that desperation point where they're not drinking their own Kool-Aid and they just want to live.
So let's just hypothetically say it was the Americans holding him in prison, interrogating him for years to get information, but they don't want him.
Or another government who was feeding whoever was interested intel about him.
But nobody wants him alive because he might have too much information. You know, for various reasons, because he's been involved in heavy government for decades long before 9/11.
But now that you've neutralized that threat, right, mm-hmm. there's still a growing threat out there. So you want to neutralize all that too. So what better way than to have the head tell you about how the operations ran, who's who, who's what, where they are, what's going to happen next, in exchange for that, right?
And why would he agree to tell anybody? I mean, obviously, I maybe pain
interrogation. I'm not saying he agreed. And I'm not saying this happened either, yeah. Right? I'm just saying, like, I'm looking at it from I'm just offering a different perspective, right? You make different decisions when you got a barrel, right, of a gun pointed at your face.
And then that whole scene where like Obama and Hillary and everybody's like watching the operation, do you think that's like somewhat staged or some people knew and some people didn't?
I think some people knew, some people didn't. I wasn't in the room, right? So I
didn't see your picture there, no.
Right, so I can't say. I would just say that, like, I mean, you got two choppers coming in, right, at night, right? Make noise. If you really were being, like, if you were really spooked about that type of stuff, had armed guards everywhere, right? Like,
you'd have escape doors.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have escape doors. You'd have an alternate way out. Tunnels, like, you know what I mean? And like I said, I wasn't there either. I don't know specifically what happened, right? But I'm just thinking that maybe the guy's not as smart as we thought he was, right? But there were probably other ways. I probably would have had a safe, ways out and all that stuff, right? And I don't quote me on this. I think we had approval, right, to go in there and do that from the government at like the very last second. Like we told them, like, hey, we're doing this. Oh, we're already there. That type of stuff, right? But there's a relationship there, right? You know what I mean? If you're going fully covert. So there's just interesting things to think about, right? So, and things to theorize on it, right? I'm not saying conspiracy theory, all the type of stuff, right? But that news was also came out at an inopportune time, right? For the people incumbents of...
Well, what interesting things do you think about right now, given today's current news events? I mean, there's so much talk now, more than ever, about cyber hacking because of the elections, because of the phishing scandals, because of election manipulation. Nobody knows anything. Everybody's meeting with everybody. What reclusive things are you skeptical about right now?
I'm skeptical that this data is being aggregated at a large amount of scale. More data is being created per second, right, than potentially the history, right, of data, right? And it keeps growing. That growth rate keeps growing exponentially. And then now, what do you do with that, right? So if I can influence someone to buy something, they've already shown intent, cool, right? You're reading news, right? I'm not saying the news isn't this anymore, right? I love journalism, I love news, all that type of stuff. But like, that's a real responsibility to the public good that they hold, right? And then when that gets intermingled, like anything with profits and quarters, right, making, hey, I need to make the next quarter in sales. I need to reach X amount of people, right?
But that's already happening. Like, there are news sites, and I'll just say them because I think they're pretty public about it, like Upworthy.com, I think that's the name of it. They will, thousands of times a second, switch headlines, switch photos, switch the way the first sentences are written to see who,
and that,
which articles capture the eyeballs the most.
And for them, that's smart. But the incentive, what's scary about me is all this data aggregation and falling in the hands or not being used properly, right, or without the right intention, right? Because then what happens is it's like, that's where the real hacks come in, right? Like, cool. There's one hack where I get your bank account, right? There's another hack where like, oh, I can get your personal information. I open up your identity. But then there's a much larger hack where I influence people. Right, where I'm the person, right, who that influences like what people are seeing, what stories are going out, and then that's really changing behavior, right, on a much larger scale. Like you can use it to sell products, right, but I can also use it to if I'm in a business of something wrong, right, I can use it for fear. Right, I can use it to change larger things, institution things. Right, I mean, like it's almost like the government. Right, you know, like we were backed by gold, we're backed by data. Right, and we just got to keep apparent of that. Right, like we just need to like understand like our data is valuable. Right, it's my digital footprint. Right, it's as valuable as my social security card. Right, it's you know what I mean. That's my footprint. Right, and you know we're human. Right. I'm human, right? I get influenced by stories like, oh man. And then like, you know, I try to do my best to check both sides, but there's no real medium where I can go and check both sides. Maybe that's a $1 billion business, right? But like, if people aren't using that for the public good, then and with that power and that data, then I'm a little, that is concerning to me.
I mean, I think what is once reclusive always becomes eventually out in the open, in the sense that everything you just said that might happen will happen and there's no avoiding it. And it becomes a matter of how you personally guide yourself through it. Like you're being aware of these biases that are going to constantly pop up.
Because look at the history, look at the pattern of history, right? I mean, you have these great sides that go up, right? And then a lot of times there's always one tyrant guy, right, that like wants a little too much, right? Starts out with an idiom and an idea, right? And then wants a little too much. And then that's bad for the whole, right? So in some cases, unfortunately, there were genocide, you know what I mean? This is still happening right now in a few parts of the earth, right? But what if what if they got that information? What if they're the ones in control of that data, right? What if they're the ones who could turn the lights out tomorrow, right? I mean, I feel like I personally need to educate people. Like, hey, man, like this is something that's happening. You need to be more secure with your own data. And then the problem is, it's like there's always going to be, history says there's always going to be one of those guys, James, right? So then it's either you trust the government to be that guy policing that,
but they can't anymore.
Right. Or you know what you got to do, man? You got to be smart with your own data, or you need to be the person.
Yeah, I sort of think data is the government.
Right.
So I don't think the government even really matters that much, except for the laws, the legacy laws that we all live by, like, you know, healthcare and, you know, all the things that we argue about every day.
Right.
But what you're talking about, I think that's this, I don't want to say shadow government because that's overused, but I think that is where the real government is starting to form, and we don't know who the players are,
right?
And we don't know what's out there. And it's not even being conspiratorial. This already exists.
No, because look, think of it. That's happening, right? And in this is probably the truth. It's happening to help people with their incentives for their quarter-to-quarter profits, get more data, make more money. And it's being done in a novel effort. Give people the right product at the right price. That way it's a win-win. They get a deal. And then, and then the company makes money to continue to offer those deals, right? But like, I'm just saying from a point of like, what if, just looking at history, right? If that gets placed in the wrong hands, gets used for what's wrong, right? I mean, so
which,
like,
will happen.
Well, which would, so like, but here, now on the flip side of this, in this time, right, more so now than ever, right, has a lot of barriers of entry been broken, have a lot of, a lot of things been democratized, right? Before, right, to go up against an institution, right? I'd have to almost be an institution. Now I could go viral, right? I mean, you could see a lot of this, these changes happening now. So, I mean, like, it's, I think now more than ever, are we put in a place where we need to stand up for what we believe in, right? We have these powerful, engaging tools, right, to influence others and data, right? And it's great. It's been a great medium to share them, to share my pictures with people. And I'm using it for that, right? But I mean, keep the balance, right? You believe something, right? Share it.
Given all this, and given that I want to be a responsible citizen and I want to improve myself and I want to understand this world we're moving towards, what books or websites or whatever should I read to become more aware?
So here's what I tell everybody for that type of stuff. First, you heard my story. I didn't really go to college. I graduated like when I was 29, 30, just to, you know, for my child, right? So that way I could say, yeah, you need to go, right? And that was just,
I would not have done that.
I knew you were going to say that, right? But I would tell people, I found something I was interested in, and then that was the best education I've ever had, right? The other thing was like a stamp. I don't even know where the diploma is, right? It's like buried somewhere, right?
So you found something you were interested in, which is hard for people to do.
Yeah, but you know, well, true, but start somewhere, man, right?
Like try enough things.
Go out, like live a life. Mm-hmm. Like don't be succumbed to your phone, right? Or if that's what you're into, right, then get into that, mm-hmm. right? If you're into, like, you know what I mean? But like find something you're interested in and then learn everything about it, right? Or you know what? Change your career. Right, you're doing something you don't want to do, change your career. You found something you're interested in, go do that. Go do that. Because then what'll happen is you'll learn, you're passionate, you may be more passionate than the person running that business.
And I'm gonna play devil's advocate.
Go.
I'm a divorced wife raising three kids and I have to pay the mortgage and I'm listening to James and Mr. X and they're saying, change my career. I'm really interested in fantasy sports for women, but I have to be a paralegal somewhere. How can I do it?
Get less sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you really want to do it, look, we live in a great country. If you really want to do something, right, what I'm kind of saying is like the opportunity is there. So get really interested in something. Then read those books, right? Get to be an expert or gain that experience. Go work there, right? Gain that experience, get really educated. Because what happens is it's like, I mean, if we didn't have biases of opinion, biases of educated opinion, right? If we didn't have real, and what I mean educated opinion, someone who really knows their tack, knows this industry, knows this niche, knows the best about fantasy football for women, right? What happens is you bring an equilibrium to the game. Right, I mean, or it was like if that never happened, right? We'd be all still standing at in the center of the earth, at fear for falling off one of the edges.
Right,
right. So get involved, even if it's a passion, right? Like, you know, what I mean, I coach, or I plan to coach my daughter's soccer league. Dude, I think that's my next thing. I'm gonna be like a women's soccer coach, right? Maybe maybe in like 10 years, I'm Team USA soccer coach. That's my dream, right? But anyway, find those things, right? And then immerse yourselves in those books, right? And then what you'll find is what you learn there. Right. It's just like when I train a machine learning model, right? Like the more data I get in, the smarter it gets, right? When you get more data, right, into your head about something, and you get educated opinions and understand how something that you love works, you're going to make educated opinions about how other things work.
Well, because you're going to be able to make connections much faster.
Synapses.
And so the learning grows exponentially as you immerse.
Absolutely. And then, like, I love the article, right, or the essay or whatever, it's the white paper, right, The American Scholar by Ralph Waldo Emerson, right? If you take a read of that, I mean.
I will. I never read it.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like, it's been so long, it's free.
This right? is why you went to college.
Right. Yes, right, to read those things. I don't know. I didn't read in college. But great thing. But the best thing is, right, to, like, just go ahead and do something, right? Just take it. Don't be, to quote him, don't be a reclusive thinker commenting from afar, right? Take action. Whatever that is that you love.
Well, Mr. X, there are actually so many other things we could talk about. You'll have to come on again at some point.
For sure.
But thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for, I will say this. I know you've personally saved a lot of lives.
Oh,
this,
I wouldn't say that, man.
I'm going to say
I would not say that.
I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay.
So thank you, and let's talk soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
For more from James, check out the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network at jamesaltucher.com and get yourself on the free insiders list today.
Hey, thanks for listening. Listen, I have a big favor to ask you, and it'll only take 30 seconds or less, and it would mean a huge amount to me. If you like this podcast, please let me know. Please let the team I work with know. Please let my guests know, and you can do this easily by subscribing to the podcast. It's probably the biggest favor you could do for me right now, and it's really simple. Just go to iTunes, search for The James Altucher Show, and click subscribe. Again, it will only take you 30 seconds or less. And if you subscribe now, it will really help me out a lot. Thanks again.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.